everybody. Welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. Eric Rubenstein, Senior Director of Litigation, Fraud, Waste, Abuse, here for this week's episode here, of course, with my two partners in crime, Wade McFall, or Wade McFowl. I know on the Long Island Library, there was a whole discussion. Is it McFall or McFowl or some combination of the two? Wade, either way, retired Assistant Special Agent in Charge from the OIG and currently one of our directors on our one of our CMS contracts. And of course, Matt Kachansky, the retired Special Agent in Charge from the OIG, the retired Northeast UPIC Director, and the Senior Director of our Payment Integrity Team. So we want to start with talking about dress for the job you want, not the job you have. I am clearly going to work as either a personal trainer or shabby homeless chic. Wade, I know you said skateboarder or social influencer or maybe something from the MTV days, one of the two of those. And of course, Matt, stunt double for Christopher Walken or pro-am golfer. Pick one or the other. So we talk about dress for the job you want, not the job that you have. And the topic, that really is a topic that segues into, the topic really today is about different certifications that are out there. There's a lot of them. You've got your coding related, auditing related certifications and credentials. By the way, I don't want to be offensive to anyone, but these certifications are not licenses. I have many conversations with people that are applying for positions here, and they talk about their license as a CPC. And I think it's very important for people to understand that anytime you have a certification from one of these organizations that produces these certifications, they are not licenses. Licenses provide legal authorization under state statute and regulation to operate and act in certain ways, scope of practice and things of that sort. It is a license is a professional designation that is issued by a state or a regulatory body for the purposes of allowing people to act in certain ways. Anybody who has a designation as, you know, certified fraud examiner, which I have, the AFI, accredited healthcare fraud investigator, any of the coding or auditing certifications, CPC, CPMA, anything along those lines, the AHIMA ones, any of those, they are certifications. It is a way for an organization to denote that you have met the requirements under their training and education requirements to be thus certified and therefore use that designation with your name. It is not a license. But that being said, you know, I get on LinkedIn, on email, you know, I hate when you see on social media, people say, I get a lot of questions about, and I always want to know what's a lot of questions. If you have 10 followers and one person asked, is that a lot of questions? But I do get a fair amount of questions from people who ask about wanting to come over to an SIU, whether it's the advised SIU or getting into some SIU. And people ask the question all the time about, you know, what can I do to make myself a more attractive candidate? And I tell people oftentimes, go online and look at job descriptions and see what those job descriptions are asking for as far as prior experience and or education and or certifications. You know, oftentimes we see that it'll say preferred qualifications, and I think you have to think in terms of what makes you a standout, you know, in that particular position. But wait, I want to start with you because you don't have any certifications whatsoever, and that's not a bad thing, and we're not saying it's a bad thing, but you're a great example because you have a military background, which I believe is a certification in and of itself. So that means a lot of things in the world. And we talked on our last podcast about military backgrounds and the transferable skills that that brings. But you have no certifications. You went in the military. You went to college. You then got hired as an OIG agent without any certifications. And generally at the OIG and generally in government, certifications aren't necessarily the thing that gets you a job or doesn't get you a job. There may be educational requirements, whether it be a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, a PhD, a law degree. Some jobs are specific. You have to have a specific set of criteria, whether it be, you know, a pharmacy background or whatever. But the certifications are typically, when you're getting into a government space, are typically just enrichment type things. It's not the thing that gets you a job or doesn't get you a job. But I know that what winds up happening is a lot of people have a level of discouragement about applying for a job because it may say preferred qualifications. You see these resumes of people all the time. that don't have these qualifications. And I think, what I want to try to focus a little bit on with you is the lack of discouragement that people should have regarding a lack of certification and feeling that they aren't qualified. I know one thing that I always tell people is if you don't apply for the job, you've already rejected yourself. You may still get that rejection, but at least you have to give yourself the opportunity to submit that application for the role. So I know that, you don't have any certifications. You've done okay in your career, clearly. You've managed to, muddle through. And but a lot of the people that are on our teams don't have certifications. A lot of them are people that have just a lot of experience and have either gotten that experience through a variety of different, prior jobs or things of that sort. But talk a little bit about how the lack of certification shouldn't be something that serves as a detriment to applying for the position.
Right. It certainly, sorry. It certainly shouldn't be something that, looked at as a negative or something that's discouraging. It's really literally just one piece of the puzzle in your kind of effort to tell your story and give your, ex related experience to the job. So I look at it really as one method to kind of separate yourself from the other dozens, if not hundreds, applying for the same job. So it'll help to get your resume to the pile that's going to be reviewed a second time, as opposed to, a lot of them just go right into the no longer contact needed, pile or whatever. And especially if you don't have an in for the position you're trying to obtain. If you know somebody that works there in the same position or is in management and they've worked with you in the past, they know your history, they know your qualifications and your skills. So in my opinion, that's much more valuable than having a certification. But a lot of times you're going in cold and you don't know anybody and they don't know you from the rest of the 100 resumes they're looking at. So in that case, it does weight your resume a little bit better. But again, it's really, I don't think it's a replacement for having previous experience. So if you're looking at a certain job description, I think it's important to, again, not be discouraged if you don't have the certs, even if they say, CPC or CFE or AFE, whatever, preferred. That doesn't mean it's required, it's preferred. And if you can show that you have that similar experience through your past employment, I think that's probably even more telling. But I think it's key to using these job descriptions. They list skills that they're looking for, and it's, a lot of times it's just a bullet list, and that's very important to go through and show as best you can that you have those skills. And that's not saying that if it says, the investigator needs to have analytical skills. So you don't respond to that by saying, I have analytical skills. You show something from your past experience that shows that you have those skills instead of you just
Right.
regurgitating what the bullet list is.
Right.
I think another important thing too is when you're giving those examples, you get into a situation where, what's the right length or what's the right volume of your experience you put in a resume? Do you want, some people prefer a clean one-page resume with a couple high points. Some want a couple pages, but you certainly don't want a 10-page resume because no one's going to get past page two, probably.
Right.
Which I think brings me to another very important point when you're trying to hit all those bullet points with past experience, you want to prioritize them and have the first bullet, if there's four different categories, the first bullet in each category should be the number one, that's your home run based on some experience. And then you prioritize them. So the home run is number one, and then you go down because most likely, especially if the employer is going to review 50 or 100 resumes, they probably aren't going to read every bullet point on every
Right.
CV.
Right.
So it's important to have your top hits right underneath the criteria they're looking for, and then kind of prioritize. And then you have to edit for length. If you think you want a one-page clean resume, you should have a resume that has all your bullet points that show all the different skills that you may need. And you have to edit each resume for a specific job. If they're looking for something specific related to data, you might want to pull out some of your stuff that has
great point.
Stuff related to like undercover operations or stuff like that. That's not relevant to this job. So remove that and don't muddy up your resume with those bullet points.
And that's a great point, Wade. I'll tell you, you know, I do a lot of resume reviews here, Matt, you know, a lot of resume reviews. I will tell you, I can't even describe the number of resumes that I've gotten in which the role that the person is applying for, the resume is absolutely inapplicable to the role that they're applying for. I mean, zero. There isn't a single reference to the role that they're applying for. They don't have any of the, you know, the necessary skill sets. I've posted positions for SIU investigator, for example, where we ask for 5 years of SIU experience because it's not an entry-level position. And I get resumes from people who have zero. I mean, zero. They've never even worked in an SIU. They've never worked in a healthcare environment, and they're sending a resume. You've got to tweak it. I recently had an incident, a few instances where we have a large team of doctors that are doing utilization management reviews. And there are two different guidelines that are out there. One is called InterQual, one is called Milman. The Milman guidelines are, Milman's an actuarial firm. They're actually the firm that just won the chili cook-off, which involved no chili and no cooking, but they won that chili cook-off. Milman's an actuarial firm. They have a set of guidelines and criteria for utilization management for inpatient reviews, things like sepsis, short stays, observational reviews, things of that sort. The competing set of guidelines are what are known as InterQual or IQ guidelines. And they're similar, but they're not the same. Some doctors that do these reviews and some nurses that do these reviews have knowledge and expertise in both. Some only have knowledge or expertise of one. And so we were bringing on a team of doctors, and the client need was that the docs had to have InterQual experience, and it must be documented. And I can't tell you how many resumes I looked at that didn't have that skill set in the resume. And then I reach out to the doctor and I say, I see you're a UM doc, you're doing these reviews on behalf of a hospital system, you're doing exactly what we need because you've outlined it, you know, conducting utilization management reviews for short stay or sepsis or whatever it is. Do you have InterQual experience? Oh yes, I consider myself an expert in InterQual, I've been using it for 10 years. Update your resume to show that. Right. I've got it in my job description. When I send out my post for the role, I'm saying must have InterQual experience documented on your resume, and the doctors aren't doing it. Then I reach out to them because it appears from the resume they have it. And you say, hey, just tweet your resume to show you've got InterQual experience. Because when I get resumes, all I'm doing is keyword searching, which is, I think, right now what a lot of people are doing. When you have 100 resumes, you start with keyword searches, because if I'm looking for someone who has InterQual, and I know that InterQual is known as InterQual or IQ, I'm keyword searching for InterQual or IQ. And if I don't see it, I have to put that resume to the side for the moment, because then I need to go back later and look at it. But if I have 100 resumes and I need 10 positions, and I have 10 resumes where InterQual is listed on the resume, those are my 10 people I'm starting with. I'm not going to send emails out to the other 90 people and asking them to clarify this when my job description already has that, you know, kind of in there. So Matt, that kind of leads to this other half, which is that when you're looking at job descriptions and you're looking at what SIU needs are, oftentimes you just don't have the ability to change that, right? If you don't have a CFE, an AFE, a CPC, if you don't have any of those, and there are some jobs where those certifications are absolutely required. If I'm going to be hiring people to do medical audits, I want people that have a certification to do medical audits. I love CPC, CPMA. Those are, that to me is the best certification combo for people that are working in an SIU capacity, because they get the coding certification so they understand LCDs, NCDs, policies, and the like. And the CPMA certification teaches people how to be proper documenters of those findings relative to the policies that are out there. But when we look at job descriptions, and you know, for us, our in-house team, those certifications are nice things, but we don't require them because we look at people's kind of overall experience. But sometimes an SIU has just made the determination that they want the person to either have that certification, get it within the first year of employment, or have it as a preferred designation.
Yeah, what, you know, for a company like ours, you know, we have, you know, multiple clients where we serve as their outsourced SIUs. Each of those plans have different criteria for what they want to see in their investigators, you know, whether it's numbers of years of experience, specific claim types or specific, you know, areas like Medicaid or Medicare or commercial. They all look for those types of things. There's a few of them that do have, they want certifications as a mandatory requirement for certain positions. You know, for, so internal, you know, like, you know, I do look through a lot of resumes, but like Wade was talking about, you got 50 or 100, you kind of get lost in the mix. So the first thing I turn to is internally to see if people internally fit that bill to send them over there, because I'd rather be able to tell the client, hey, this is a known entity, whether they have a certification or not, here you go. We're gonna move this person to your contract to work for you, and then take my time to backfill the position that I've taken that from and go through that. So it's, you know, taking care of the needs of the client and then having the internal people to be able to fill that. So with that, we encourage our folks to go and get certifications so that they're more agile, both for their own professional, you know, out, you know, their professional moving forward, as well as for us as their employer to be able to use them, you know, in an agile way. And so we really encourage it. We you know, we pay for the certification, all of that. So that works out well. As someone on the outside, you know, that, you know, we're looking at the resumes, it's probably a good idea to explore the possibility of getting some sort of a certification, whether that be a CFE, CPC, because there might come the time where it's either preferred or required for a job that you really want. And you don't want to be stuck at that point saying, geez, I don't got it. You know, so, you know, try to get those certifications just to have them in the bank for yourself. Even if your current job doesn't require it, a future job that you really want might. Let's say an example of that is, you know, we have, you know, one of our clients, investigator positions, not needed for their team lead positions. So moving up in the organization, it is a requirement, or lead investigator. So even the people in those investigator positions for that contract, if they want to move up, they should look to get those certifications now.
Dressing for the job you want, not the job you have. So that's a great point, Matt. And you know, the thing I would say is I became a CFE after I retired from the OIG. I didn't have any certifications while I was an OIG agent. It wasn't necessary. But when I started looking, knowing that I was coming here to advise, and we're a consulting company, so it may be a little bit different, but I wasn't looking to go work at an SIU directly. I was looking to work in the consulting advisory space. But I thought personally, having gone through and looked at what different roles within SIUs had, and I saw that there was a preference for CFE or AFE, and I thought, let me get one of these certifications, because if I'm going to be sitting consulting with a company that is requiring its staff to have a CFE, it should be, you know, as we like to always say, like-minded people, right? You want to have an apples to apples conversation. So that may be something where people should look to do that from their own personal enrichment, particularly people that aren't already in the space. If you're looking to get into the space, getting some of these certifications might help you. Now, the thing is, if you haven't really looked into them, these aren't $20,000, $30,000 certifications. We're not talking about you going out and getting the equivalent of a master's degree. These are, you know, $1,000, $1,500, sometimes less. I forget how much CFE is. I did it a number of years ago. There's an upfront initial cost. You have to do the study guide, and, you know, the exam cost is a few hundred bucks, and the yearly certification and all of that. So there is a cost for that. Same thing with any of the other certifications you do. None of these are free. These are all from, you know, for-profit companies or not-for-profit companies that have to pay to maintain themselves as organizations. But it is certainly something where if someone is saying, you know, hey, I'm working as a coder at a doctor's office right now, and I would love to be able to get into the fraud, waste, abuse space, I say, what do you have? And so I have a CPC. I would get the CPMA. And then, you know, kind of work from there, and then see where that takes you. But I do think, you know, in some instances when you're looking for some of these jobs, these certifications become maybe a necessary evil is a strong way to put it, but sometimes these certifications become a necessary piece of how you separate yourself out. Now, for people that have been in the industry for a while, a lot of people have the CFE or the AFI. For those that go to the NHCAA, National Healthcare Anti-Fraud Association, most of the people that go to those conferences have an AFI because you get your credits from going to the NHCAA that you're required to have. But it is one of those things where if you're looking to develop yourself, if you're a CFE and you want to make yourself stand out a little bit more, maybe you get the AFI. Maybe you get one of the adjacent CFE or AFI type certifications. There's a healthcare fraud investigator type certification that's out there. There's just a whole bunch of these things that are out there. And so you can look to invest in yourself. Again, the job you want, not the job you have. And in some regards, always remember that when two people are equally qualified for a position, but one person has a little bit of a bump, that's going to make them set apart. And Matt, to your point, there are going to be instances where in order for you to get promoted up, you have to have a certain level of education, you know, or experience. I mean, for me, I went to graduate school and got a master's degree because I felt at the time that if I was competing for jobs with people with a bachelor's degree, that I at least had a little bit of a step up by having a master's degree. And then even when I was working in my job at the OIG, I went back to school years later and got a graduate certificate in healthcare administration. Not because I was looking to get promoted at the OIG at that point, because I was towards the end of my career, but I thought if I'm going to have longevity in this space, if I had a little bit more behind me, from that educational perspective, that it would serve me well, at least from a resume building perspective, to say that, oh, I went back to school and I got this graduate certificate in healthcare administration. So I learned some things that weren't really necessarily fraud, waste, abuse, but were more, you know, from that administrative perspective. And I think that that's where things kind of become those game changers for people. And while I'll say that depending upon the job, right, that's going to depend upon whether or not you're a viable candidate. But, you know, Wade, to your point, a resume that's targeted to the job that you're applying for, right? So that's where looking at that job description is important. And then, Matt, to your point, it is, it's sometimes it's not in your control what those skills are going to be and those needs are going to be. But certainly, you know, as I said, if you don't apply for a job, you've rejected yourself. And so looking at what that job description is, and if you're not ready for that job at that moment, it's what are the things that they want? What makes you the candidate that stands out? And what makes you the candidate that makes you the best candidate for that group of other applicants? Even if you don't know who any of the other applicants are, at least know that you've got the strongest resume that you could put together, whether that be through knowledge, skills, abilities, training, education, certifications, all of that. So it's a really hot topic right now because you see kind of constantly on LinkedIn, you know, people touting all of their latest certification that they've gotten or whatever they've gotten. So it is a thing in the industry. It's just a matter of how that thing in the industry juxtaposes itself to the positions that we're looking to fill. So, you know, look at these certifications. I think a lot of them are interchangeable, the non-coding ones are not, but, you know, to an extent, there's a section in the CFE exam on healthcare fraud. So you at least get a little bit of an opportunity to see that. Obviously, the AFI is very specific to healthcare, whereas the CFE is a little bit more diverse. It involves some financial frauds, healthcare fraud, banking frauds, things of that sort, financial frauds, a little bit more diverse in that. So you have to think about what is it that you'd like to do? Where's your purpose? People that work in banking, for example, that do money laundering, they get the CAMS, Certified Anti-Money Laundering Specialist, to learn about how to identify and track money laundering cases and things of that sort. So, you know, the certification thing is an ongoing topic of conversation, almost as much as we talk about the recycling of the fraud schemes. Certifications and fraud schemes are kind of the thing that everybody seems to talk about. So take a look at them, track job descriptions, track the jobs that you're interested in, look and see what it is that people are looking for from the hiring perspective. The job description tells you that, and see where your knowledge, skills, abilities, training, and education fit. And if they don't fit, how do you get them to fit? You can get them to fit by either having a resume that's a little bit more poignant to that role. Your resume shouldn't just be a generic resume. It should be specific to the thing that you're doing. By the way, the one thing that I've noticed is people that do not have the experience that's required in the job description, will send cover letters. I get these all the time where they have cover letters where they talk about other experiences that they had that they think translate over. And that may be and true in some cases. Learner. Yeah, and my other favorite one is I'm a fast learner. If the job says you must have prior experience in X, putting, while I don't have any experience in X, I'm a fast learner, don't highlight that. Don't highlight that. That is something that I would recommend you stay away from, because putting that you're a fast learner for something that requires you already to know it, you've told me you don't know it, and I can't go on with it because the job requirement is that you have 2 years prior experience with Interqual. If you tell me I don't have experience with Interqual, but I'm a fast learner, that's great, but you don't have the 2 years of experience in using Interqual, for example. And by the way, right, Wade, Matt, everybody's a fast learner when you're interviewing them, right? So,
oh, yeah. Everybody's
a fast learner. Reality is nobody's a fast learner.
And a team player, but can work independently.
Right. So, yeah. Exactly. So, you know, be careful with these buzzwords. Be careful with these, you know, embellishments on the resume, because you'll cut through it very quickly. And, you know, we just want to make sure that when people are looking for these jobs, you got to be honest with it. Because if you're not honest, the cream will rise to the top and the sour milk will be at the bottom. And it's very, and that'll, you know, that'll get resolved very quickly. It'll be demonstrated very quickly. So you want to stay within that purview. So good stuff as always. Wade, Matt, it's always good seeing you guys. Wade, I'll see you in the skate park. Matt, I'll see you at the casting.
See you on the links.
See you on the links. Yep. So everybody who's tuning in, we always appreciate you spending the time and sending your thoughts, questions, comments, concerns, subjects for us, topics for us to discuss. We always appreciate that. Every week, again, get this in your inbox. Just go up on our website, advicehelp.com. Sign up for the newsletter. It comes to your inbox every Friday, along with Jean Marie's various and sundry weekly musings on the Long Island Library, and our LinkedIn Lives, all that. You can get that on Spotify and on YouTube after the fact by just going on and Googling, searching for Advice Health on either one of those platforms. So until next time, we'll see you on the next OIG Roundtable. Take care, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.